want to first of all thank Corey and Nathan for filling in for me last time. I've listened to their lessons and they did a fantastic job. It's a little bit intimidating to come back and your regular guy is doesn't do as good a job as your fill-in guys. So I really do appreciate their willingness and their ability to do that. We did take something. Yeah, you've taken some time off and you call it a vacation. You know, it's kind of what that was. I had, have you ever taken a vacation and when it was over, you wanted to do over? Well, it was one of those. I had a wedding the latter part of the week. A nephew was married and I performed the ceremony in Denton, Texas. So decided since it was the time of year it was and the crappie ought to be in the shallow spawning in my old favorite fishing holes. And I just take the first part of the week and go to Oklahoma and hit some of those holes. Well, you know what the weather did Monday night, right? In Oklahoma, it was 41 degrees, and it stayed within 2 degrees of that for 3 days, day and night. Didn't change. Well, suffice it to say that the crappie don't stay in shallow water. And besides that, I got in one day of fishing and woke up the second morning with, let's call it intestinal distress. For 3 days and nights with the chills and the fever. So I had planned to go and come back all tanned and smelling like fish, but rather I came back pale and smelling like Pepto-Bismol. So at a certain point in Jesus' ministry, he began to use stories to illuminate the truth that he had come to bring to the world. These stories were incredibly simple, but they were obviously hard to apply. So his disciples came to him and asked him why he was using these stories to teach the people. And in Matthew chapter 13, verse 11 through 11 and 12, he had a two-part answer. And he said, first of all, for those who are sincerely seeking, these stories shed light on the truth. And they illuminate the truth and help you to understand it more completely. But for those who are critics, they conceal the truth. And they get through and they can argue about what it was he said. They just add to their darkness. And then having said that, as you know, one of my favorite, all-time favorite comedians is Bill Cosby. And I've tried to figure out why I like him so much. And I think I know why. Because he has the ability to set something up and then give you a little zinger line, one little zinger line that's just hilariously funny. And then when you just get through laughing at that, he adds one more line on top of that. And it's even funnier. And when you get through laughing at that, he adds one more little quick line and it gets even funnier. Well, Jesus had a way of layering like that. He'll tell you a truth and then whenever as you're trying to absorb that truth, he'll give you just a little more than you're ready for. And he'll lay one more layer on top of it. And he did that here after he had told them that it was to illuminate the truth for those who are seeking and to conceal the truth for those who are critics. Then he adds this line. Whoever has will be given more and he will have an abundance. And whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away. Now, what's that about? I mean, how fair is that? I don't know about you, but that line has been one of those teachings of Jesus. It's not the only one, but it's one of those teachings that bothers me. I mean, that just seems to strike at the heart of fairness. That somebody who has a little, even the little that he has, is going to be taken away and given to him who has much. You know, if we can make a modern day something of a parallel to that, we're in the midst of a confrontation right now in our country regarding paying bonuses to the executives of some companies that are receiving bailout money. And most Americans have some pretty strong feelings about that. The majority of people applaud the approach that our government appears to be taking at this moment And that is, namely, to take away from the ones who have, and in some way at least, give it to the ones who don't have. Now, I don't want to get political about this, but I have to tell you, that makes me a little nervous that the government can target a specific group of people for that. But that's not my lesson. But, you know, we need to be real careful what cause we champion, because if they can target one group like that, then the day may come when they can target another group, and you might be in that group, and you might not applaud that so much. But beside all of that, we tend to think that this is the way things ought to be. Take away from those who have. I mean, you know, Robin Hood complex. Take away from those who have and give it to those who don't have. But what if the approach that our government took was take away from those who don't have, the little guy down here on the bottom, and give what he has to the guy who's up here on top, who's already making the $5.6 million bonus. Take away this guy down here who's getting a $500 yearly bonus. Take that away from him and give it to the guy who's making $5.6 million. Now, that makes it a little bit real, doesn't it? And that kind of flies in the face of what we think of conventional wisdom here and what we think is fair. But do you understand that's what Jesus just said right here? Whoever has will be given more, and he'll have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has, will be taken away from him. Jesus taught some pretty radical things, folks. And we read them and we go right on our way, and we don't really let it soak in. If you had been in that crowd, or if Jesus was in our society today and he started teaching that, how would you feel about him teaching that? In fact, it's quite scandalous, it's shocking, and maybe even a bit insulting. And besides all this, I've always been under the impression that Jesus is on the side of the little guy, the down and outer. Haven't you? Well, to add insult to injury, as it were, Jesus didn't just say this one time. He said it four times that we have recorded. He probably said it a lot more than that, but we have it recorded on four different occasions that he used this same identical line. One of them is in Matthew chapter 13, verse 12, whenever the disciples came to him and asked him why he spoke in parables, and that followed the parable of the sower and the soils. Another one is in Matthew chapter 25, verse 29, and he just told the parable about the three servants, one who had five talents, one who had two, and one who had one. And the five-talent guy did well with his, and he made five more. And so he's now got 10. And when he comes down to the guy who had one, he says, you know, I knew you were a hard man, and you reap where you didn't sow, and, you know, I was afraid, and so I put it in a napkin and hid it, and here's your talent back. And Jesus said, you wicked and lazy servant. If you knew that about me, then why didn't you put that money out to the money changers and add to it? And then he turned to his aides and he said, take the one talent that he has away from him and give it to the guy who's got 10. And then he quotes that line, whoever has will be given more, or he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And then there's another story very similar to that in Luke chapter 19, verse 26. He said there was a certain man who was going to another place to be coronated as king. And he had 10 servants, he called them, and he gave each one of them a mina. And they didn't want him to be their king. Kind of a little interesting twist that Jesus threw into this. But he was made king. He came back, he called them into account. And then the first guy that came and said, here, I took your mina and I made 10 out of it. The next guy said, I took your mina and I made 5 more out of it. And then the third guy came and he said, you know, same thing that the one talent man said. He said, here's your mina back again because I was afraid to use it. And there's our line again. Jesus said, take it away from him. Give it to this guy who's got 10. And then he, one more time in Mark chapter 4, and it's also the same thing as recorded in Luke chapter 8, at the conclusion of the story about you don't take a light, the one that we had read just a few moments ago in front of us, you don't take a light and put it under a bowl or under a basket or under a bed in those two contexts there. And so at the conclusion of this story about not covering up light, then there's our line again. And so wouldn't you say that if Jesus used this same statement identically four times, he must have thought it was a pretty vital message. And so this morning I'd like to take a few moments and see if we can figure out what he means. Because when I found that whenever something flies in the face of my wisdom, whenever something bothers me, I probably better not ignore it. I probably better study about it and see if I can't find out why it bothers me, because there's a reason why that bothers me. And so we start out by seeing if there's anything that these four teachings of Jesus, either parables or teachings, that they have in common that would help us understand what he's saying. In Matthew chapter 13, the parable of the soils, Jesus is evaluating people and telling you what happens when people have knowledge made available to them. The seed is the word. The word, a farmer goes out to sow and he scatters his seed, and some seed falls on this ground, some on this ground, some on this ground. And each one of those, he says, and when he hears. That's the way he starts out explaining that parable to his disciples. Each one of these people heard. In the first case, they heard and they didn't understand. He'll go on and tell later why they didn't understand, but he's talking about that God made certain knowledge available to everybody. And then Matthew chapter 25, verse 14 through 30, the parable of the talents, God gave each of these individuals certain talents, and he gave them the opportunity to use those talents. The same thing is true of the next one in Luke 19, the 10 servants with one mina each. He gave them their abilities. And then he gave them opportunities and time to use them. And then he came back and called them to account for it. And then Mark chapter 4 and Luke 8, the lamp that's on the stand, if you'll look at that context about the light and how you use that, what you are, God has made you light. He's talking about the opportunity for knowledge and how you choose to use it. God has made you a light. Do you hide it? Or do you use it properly in the community and those around you? And so what brought about the saying in each case? Well, what brought it about was how each individual used or did not use what God had put at his disposal. And that's what these four teachings have in common. Now, let's make an application of this truth. First of all, and I'm going to make a couple of applications, or I'm going to let Jesus make a couple of applications. First of all, and this is the underlying truth that makes this difficult saying about taking away from the one who has little and giving it to the one who has much, this is the underlying truth that makes that understandable. Here it is. God holds me accountable for the knowledge, the opportunities, and the abilities that he has made available to me. Not just the ones that I accept. Not just the truth that I accept. Not just the opportunities that I accept. Not just the abilities that I admit that I have. But the ones, in fact, that he made available to me. And I have to tell you, that's a shocking truth. That God is going to hold me accountable, not just for what I admit that I've got, but for what he put there in front of me to have and to know and to use. He's going to hold me accountable for that. And you see, that's shocking because I tend to excuse myself for not using certain knowledge or certain abilities or certain opportunities that make me uncomfortable. And I look around me and everybody else is doing about the same thing, and they're not doing too much that makes them uncomfortable. And so I feel pretty comfortable in excusing myself for not using those things. And we call that our comfort zone, don't we? We don't like to get out of our comfort zone. And we even have churches that are advertising, come and serve in your own comfort zone. Well, folks, I think that the Lord is calling us out of our comfort zones. I really do. And I think he's calling pretty strongly that we come out of our comfort zones. And he's saying in this that I'll be judged not only for the knowledge and opportunities and abilities that I accept, but for the ones that I refuse to accept. For those times that I said no. For those times that somebody came to me and said, will you do so and so? And I said, no. You see, that gets to be a habit. In Romans chapter 1, verse 18 through 20, it says that God's wrath is going to be revealed on those who suppress the truth that God himself has clearly revealed unto them. And he's talking about nature, the fact that God, that man can know that there is a God. And he says, the psalmist will say, the fool says in his heart, what? There's no God. Well, why is that true? Because God has given more than ample evidence in nature to prove that he exists. And he's going to hold every man accountable for the knowledge and for realization and acceptance of the fact that there's a God. There's a supreme being. And that's at least part of what Jesus meant when he followed his explanation that we've looked at with this warning. He says the prophecy of Isaiah is brought about, is true here today. You will ever be hearing, but not understanding. You will ever be seeing, but not perceiving. You see, it's almost like if I don't admit it, if I don't say, yes, that's true, then I'm not accountable for it. I'm not responsible for it. And so God holds me accountable for the knowledge, opportunities, and abilities that he makes available to me. And then a second application is, when I do use the knowledge and the opportunities and the abilities that God makes available to me, he will give me more. He'll give me more what? More knowledge, more opportunities, and more abilities. That's what he said. And conversely, when I do not use the knowledge, opportunities, and abilities that God has made available to me, he'll take away the ones that I do have. Now, how will he do that? Well, he can do it more than one way. He can do it any way he chooses, but there are some pretty obvious ways. One way that he does is he takes away our desire. And you get to the point that if you don't use it, you won't even want it anymore. God has given many of us some abilities that we've just refused to use. And we've become comfortable not using them. And whenever you really get down to it, he says, I'll take those away if you're not going to use them. It's almost like there's this limited number. I know that that's not the case, and I'm pressing this story further than it can be pressed. But whenever he says, take this away from this guy and give it to this guy, it's almost like there's this limited number of opportunities available. And if you're not going to use them, he'll give them to somebody else. And there's this limited amount of abilities. And if you're not going to use your ability, he'll take it away from you and give it to somebody else. And you know, the sad thing is, some of us would be quite content if he did. That's really a scary thought. And this is why some Christians, as a friend of mine used to say, have a bad case of the can't help it. They just can't help it. I'm in this situation and I just can't help it. When you start saying no, it becomes a habit. And folks, it shrinks your soul. Here is another key to understanding this vital truth. What you have in this context here, those that have much and those that have little, what you have depends on you. That makes this even more understandable. Why do some people have a lot? Because they use a little they had and God gave them more. That's why. And so ultimately, what you have depends on you. You pick out somebody that you know who's an effective teacher, and you ask yourself, why is that person an effective teacher? Because they teach. I'm pretty sure, at least in most cases, they didn't start out just really an effective teacher. But they started using what they had, and God gave them more. And He gave them more. And that's the beauty of this thing in our lives. I mean, this is really an important principle in our lives, that as our lives go on, we should. And if we do it according to God's plan, we'll get more and more and more effective. And that's a neat thing, because we tend in this life to think about things that we lose as we get older. But you'll get more effective as you get older. And how about a person that's a soul winner? Have you noticed that there are some people that just always seem to be able to have a Bible study? Why? You know why. Because they took advantage of the ones when the opportunity came along. And you start looking for them, and God puts more and more people in your life. How about somebody who's an encourager? You notice that they just keep on. You're not going to run out of encouraging words. Sometimes we want to hold things in reserve so we don't run out. My goodness, you think the Lord's hand is that short? You think He's going to run out of abilities to give you? How about a person who's a generous giver? Have you noticed that there are some people that just give and give and give and give, and the more they give, the more it seems like they have? That's the Lord's way. That's what He said will happen. Why are they so effective? Because they have used the knowledge and the opportunities and the talents that God gave them. And God keeps on, as they keep using them, He keeps giving more and more. And that's why this is not an unfair principle. That's why. Because what you have depends on you. It's not by accident. Jesus said, in essence, use it or what? Lose it. He did, didn't he? That's what this says. Use it or lose it. And here's God's challenge to you. Regardless of your age, by the way, you know that in many cases, maybe most cases, you can look across a group of young people and tell which ones are going to be the leaders. It's really not that hard. You know which ones it is? The ones that step up and say yes. That's the ones that's going to be the leaders. And it's not just true of young people. It's true in every walk of life. And so regardless of your age, your educational background, your financial income level, your past successes, and maybe your past failures, and in spite of your fears, stop saying, I can't. And start saying yes. I know it brings you out of your comfort zone. I know that it's a scary thing. But I also know that's what the Lord's calling us to do. Stop saying, I can't. Because it's killing you. And let me just throw, since this is pretty much us chickens here this morning here, this early service here, let me throw out, it's a little bit disappointing that we keep looking for somebody who will help organize a vacation Bible school, and we keep looking in a congregation of about 400, and we keep looking and we keep looking, and everybody keeps sitting back, waiting for somebody else. So, Jesus is saying becomes a wonderful promise. For those who will step forward and say yes, He says, I'll give you more. Not only will I cause you to succeed, if you'll give me what you have. And you say, well, it's just not very much. What's that you got in your hand? Well, Lord, it's just a few fish and a few loaves. Well, would you give them to me? I'll make them adequate. Would you give them to me? Moses, what's that in your hand? Well, it's just the shepherd's staff. Would you give it to me? Would you let me use it? And let me show you what I can do with it. And so the Lord has a wonderful promise that He holds out to you. And you look at yourself and you look at your shortcomings and you look at what you think you can't do. And you look at all those things and you say, I can't. And the Lord says, all I ever ask of you, all I ever ask is just say, I'll try. Here, this is all I've got, but I'll give it to you. And he has this wonderful promise, and then he has this sinister warning. Whoever does not have even what he has will be taken from him. Heed God's warning and claim his promise. And I would suggest to you that this morning, if you need to repent, repent of laziness, of inactivity, of not using what God has given to you. Pray about your fear. Pray about your lack of confidence. And then force yourself to quit trusting yourself and look to God. Because he said, I will make you adequate for anything that I ask you to do. Just simply say yes. And God promises to make your life more and more productive. Have you heard God's word? Has a seed fallen on your heart? What are you doing with it? Are we waiting for somebody else to do the stuff, the things? What are you doing with what God has put at your disposal? It's all important. And if you're not a Christian, why would you wait? That word, God has put it in your heart. Let it produce in your heart. It's powerful. It has the power. You don't have to have the power. It has the power. Just say yes while we stand and sing.